KUER News in Salt Lake City. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Well, it's about a lot of things. Really, Don Argut's film Believer is about Dan Reynolds, the frontman for the band Imagine Dragons, trying to put on a concert. It's more than a concert. It's a festival he has in mind. He wants to get Mormons and the LGBT community together to start talking about the things they agree on and the things they don't. Reynolds himself is a Mormon. He led a conventional Mormon life, served a mission, but he wants to make amends for not speaking out against the idea that gay people who live as gay people are sinners. The concert doesn't really resolve anything, not yet anyway, but the film is about the process of Reynolds trying to figure out how to move forward. Today in the program, we're talking about the film. It's called Believer. Join us after the news. Hi, it's Doug Fabrizio. If you were or are a theater kid in high school, you'll love our latest short at Radio West Films. We went along with the Kearns High School Theater Department as they rehearsed their school musical, The Delightfully Goofy Xanadu. Think Greek gods on roller skates. Anyway, we found some great characters and some pretty big dreams, too. Go see it at RadioWest.org. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It had been on Dan Reynolds' mind for years, the LDS Church's position on same-sex marriage. Reynolds is Mormon, raised in a pretty typical Mormon household, lived a typically Mormon life, went on a mission, was all in. He also happens to be, these days, a rock star, a famous one, the front man, of course, for the band Imagine Dragons. And in the documentary film Believer, Dan has been trying to reconcile his commitment to his church with his support of the gay community. And in some ways, he's trying to make amends for teaching as a missionary that gay relationships are sinful. So he conceives of this idea for a festival, a concert in Utah, where people would come together, listen to music, and just hear the stories of people feeling neglected or shamed or left out of their community for who they are and who they love. For Reynolds, who wants to stay in the faith, this is risky. In the film, his brother explains it, the challenge to go into this intersection of LGBT people and communities of faith. It's not easy, he said. Will you express it in a way that comes across as if you're throwing a stone, or will it come across as someone putting his arms around his fellow brothers and sisters and saying, let's do better? The film is called Believer. Don Argut directed the film. He's joining us here in the studio of KPCW in Park City. And Don Argut, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, man.
And Dan Reynolds, I mentioned, of course, he's in the film, the principal subject. He's joining us here, too. And thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Believer, I should point out, has been acquired by HBO. We'll give you more details about screenings of the film a little bit later on the program. Don Argut, I wanted to start with you. You are not a particularly religious person. You've talked about that. So I'm trying to get a sense of what your perspective was of this, coming from that side, hearing from Dan and the conflict he feels with his family and the situation with his tribe, with his... I mean, how was that from a kind of outsider perspective, hearing that?
I mean, for me, I grew up listening to punk rock and heavy metal, and that was my religion, I would say. And it could, because I say that not in a joking way, but I say it in a way that, you know, I think religion, first and foremost, kind of indoctrinates you into your tribe, your people that you are like-minded with. And for me, it was the kids that listened to punk rock and heavy metal. We were all like-minded. We were all angry. We were all, questioning. And I think that for me, that those are the things that have kept me going as I've gotten older. And I never looked back and said, oh, that was a phase I went through. And now I listen to, you know, Kenny Loggins or something like, you know, I still find myself listening to the same stuff I listened to when I was, 14 and 15 years old. So, but yeah, I think, making documentaries now for about, I'd say, like 13 or 14 years, I've really learned probably more than anything, and I do attribute this to, you know, my upbringing and the type of music that I listen to, is just to listen. Hmm. And to, I think the job of a documentarian, first and foremost, is to be a listener, And then I think there's a portion that you're a friend. There's a portion that you're a therapist. And then there's a portion that you're a storyteller. And, you know, I never really think about what portion of myself I'm in at any particular moment. But for me, when I met Dan, I immediately hit it off with him. I think we had a connection that we both recognized right away. And there was a willingness and a trust, I think, in him to tell his story to me. And I've said this many times, but I take that very seriously.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, I was going to get to this later, but I may as well bring this up now. It's amazing how much the film is about music. Because, like, I kept listening to the lyrics of some of Dan's stuff and some of Asia's stuff, and how the idea of music, not only just reflecting these ideas that you're thinking, that you're working out, comes up into play, but also as music, in Dan's case, played a role in giving him an identity and having him find a place.
Absolutely.
Like, do you think about that, Dan? Like, that's what music was for you on some level? Oh, you have church on one hand, but then there's music too.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny you say that, because the first song I ever wrote, I was 13 years old. And we had this program on our computer at home called Cakewalk that my brother would create music on. And I'd watch over his shoulder, and he had a single microphone. And he was like playing singer-songwriter stuff on a guitar. Anyway, when he left to go hang out with friends, I kind of snuck on. And that's when I wrote my first song. And the first song I ever wrote was about my faith crisis, even as a 13-year-old. Yeah. I felt that I was in a family of all these people who knew God, and why didn't I? And was it because I was not good enough or something of that sort? But I really hit it in this poetic way. And I got to express myself in something I needed to express, but I was able to do it through music. And that's what music has always been for me, very therapeutic, very, you know, the song was called All By Himself. That's the first song I ever wrote. And I couldn't really play guitar at the time, so it was literally just me beatboxing and singing. It was like, and then like this soulful, like, all by himself, no other one around. He stood all alone. When would he be found? It was like all, it was like this 13-year-old reflecting on how I felt alone. And it's just, that's music for me always. So, yeah.
Well, I kept thinking of, and this comes up in the film, you talk about, because it's interesting, Thunder became such a massive hit for you guys, and the film is being shot while you're putting the last touches on it. And I'm like, you have no idea how big this sucker is going to be. But you talked about how this is a time in your life, in reference to the lyrics of Thunder, like with the lightning before the thunder, like feeling, you said in the film, misplaced.
Yeah.
Never quite like you were settled in a pocket. So there's another sense of who you are reflected in a song.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because that song has really taken on a new meaning for me now because this is the first time in my life that I've really... the word activist, I don't like that word. I don't like to use it for myself because there's people who've done this for a long time and are far more deserving of a word like that. But to just be vocal and offend some people has never been my MO my entire life.
Because you're raised Mormon, right? Mormons hate that.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw someone get in a fight when I was in second grade and feeling like I wanted to throw up. I'd never seen hatred like that. And I always would laugh when someone told a joke, even if it wasn't funny, just to make that person feel good. And I'm not saying that in a way of like I'm a good person. That's just who I was raised to be, to be someone who made people feel comfortable and to please people. And now it took me till I was 30 years old to realize that's not necessarily a great way to live. There's an in-between space where you can be a good human being and love people, but disagree with them for progress and for sake of your own sanity and being a human. And so long story short, that song has really taken on a new meaning to me. And now that, you know, this time in my life, it was good and it led me to a place where maybe there's a lot about religion and Mormonism that I cherish and I'm still Mormon, but there's a lot of, it's fired me up to have that thunder moment to say, you know what, enough is enough. And now it's the time to have a voice. And if it offends some people along the way, that's okay.
Yeah. So interesting. I think it's, in some ways, it's kind of one of the themes of the film. And it seems kind of ironic too, that one of the characteristics that that Dan talks about is missionaries are persistent. They're willing to hear no time and time again, and they're willing to work, and they're willing to be humiliated and still get up and do it again and again. And it seems like, Don, I want to hear you on this. That is a theme that resonates in a kind of ironic way. He's using the gifts that he got as a Mormon missionary.
Putting it back onto him.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that these are things, you know, that's where I think the storyteller part comes into play, where, you know, when you're making a documentary and you're shooting and you know, there's no blueprint for how a particular day of shooting is going to go, especially when you're, you know, kind of just showing up with a camera and being in a kitchen and real life is happening. But, you know, once you have all the footage and you go back and you have to now figure out how to link it all together and find these common themes and make things relatable. I mean, to me, like as you pointed out before, the music is a huge part of it. But also when you're given gifts like somebody like Dan, who is in a spot right now, ready to go on a journey, you're always looking for ways to make things that in his past be relevant to his future. And obviously the easiest one is a missionary, you know, someone who's out there knocking on doors, spreading a message. And this was, you know, it's almost like too trite. There was a time that was going to be called, you know, probably something that had mission in the title or something, you know, very obvious like that. But I think that, having that as a running theme of somebody who this is their new mission, and taking something that all the good things that the church provided him throughout his whole life and kind of spinning that around on the church is beautiful.
Yeah.
You know,
let me play a moment from the film. This is Dan. And you'll hear some clips from when he was a missionary too. This is from the film Believer.
What carries you on is your complete, resolute belief in what you're doing. You are resilient about it, and so you knock those 100 doors.
If there's anything I can leave with y'all tonight, it would just be that my testimony of this gospel is that I know it's real, and it does bring true happiness.
I came home from my mission, and I allowed my brain to really think about life and what I wanted out of it and who I wanted to be. Everybody, you know, in the Mormon community knew my family was like the smart Reynolds, the doctors, the lawyers, the good kids. You want your daughter to date a Reynolds boy, you know, they're good kids. You know, my brothers all went to BYU. They all married, you know, great Mormon girls, had great Mormon families. And I didn't want to be the one to break that cycle. And so it just, you know, it seemed like the easy route, like you follow the line.
Dan, one of the things you talk about in the film is that the contrast you have between your life as a rock star, yeah, and your life as a, you know, as a conventional Latter-day Saint or as a missionary even. And you say that you had to relearn everything about everything you'd ever known when you were thrust into the world. Would you talk a little bit about that? What do you figure you had to relearn?
Well, as a Mormon, and especially as a missionary, you are taught to be nothing. They say lose yourself in the work, which really means lose your sense of being, because you're so focused on these other people and their problems and saving them and bringing them God or getting them off drugs. And you really do in a lot of sense. You also call home only twice a year, Mother's Day and Christmas. Other than that, you get a ride home once a week. No girlfriends, boyfriends, nothing like that. You're supposed to focus outward, which I think is a beautiful thing. And I still hold that dear about my mission. It was really hard, very lonely, very isolating. I have nightmares still that I and like didn't finish my mission and had 6 more months to go. Wow. And I wake up really sweating, and it's like this the only reoccurring nightmare I have.
Wow.
So it's this strange dichotomy of appreciation, but also I never want to do that again. I don't want, you know, people to spit on me anymore. I don't want to, like, you really get ridiculed and beat up. I remember the first day of my mission, a guy walked up to me and he said, "You are the weakest of the weak. Religion is for weak people. They need something to baby them. You're weak." And he was this handsome, tall, strong guy. And I just remember just feeling like, oh man, it makes me emotional to even think back on this, because I was just so, I wanted so bad to find my sense of self. And it was a hard way to start my mission. But I also took that and I said, you know what? I'm gonna follow my truth wherever it takes me. And so then I came home, and then my band just took off in this crazy way. And all the focus is on you.
Yeah.
And it was weird. And you talk about yourself a lot, and you have people talk about you a lot. You know, some people love you and some people hate you, and some people love your music and some people hate your music. And it was like, and then everybody expects you to be doing drugs and to be debaucherous, and not to say I didn't have my moments of debauchery and learning, but I think it was a necessary thing for me. I needed to experience life, and I did on a lot of levels. And then I came out somewhere in the middle, finding a place for me that felt free. That's the truth. I needed freedom, and it took two very opposite different worlds to teach me that.
You know, your wife, Asia Volkman, she's in a really important part of this film, I have to say, just in terms of what she represents, because it seems, Don, on some level, their relationship is symbolic of that accommodation that Dan has to try to come to. The part of him that's Mormon and the part of him that wants to be outside of Mormonism in some way, or part of the world.
Right.
Do you think that's right?
I think absolutely that's right. Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously I was not there for all of their relationship at all, but I certainly, you know, by talking to both of them, got a sense of, and it's certainly a part of Dan's story and a part of the film, that how difficult it was. And that was, again, another thing, like stepping into this world and realizing that there was all this past history that led him to these moments that mm-hmm. that we were exploring in the film. And I think, you know, again, as a storyteller, you're kind of trying to find these links and these foundational things to build off of. And the fact that, you know, as we started to talk about, you know, their history together, I mean, really kind of one of the pivotal moments is, you know, Prop 8,
yeah.
You know, and it's right there.
Well, we should explain. And Dan, maybe I should ask, did she know, before she met you, did she know anything at all about Mormonism?
Very little. When I told her, we talked about it, the you know, it's a funny thing. She makes fun of me to this day, because the first question I asked her when we sat down, my band opened for hers.
Yep.
And then I waited till she got off
stage. No, this is Nico Vega, right?
Nico Vega,
yeah. Should mention, those who don't know, she's a terrific artist in her own right.
Incredible artist. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This badass hard rock.
Yeah.
You know, she was just so ahead of her time and never quite got their due. But anyway, after she got off stage, I waited for like an hour to talk to her. And then we sat down, and the first thing I said to her is, I said, "What do you believe?" And she said, "What?" And I said, "What do you believe in?" And then and instantly that connected us, because she said, "Wow, that's actually the only thing that I like to talk about right now." And so we had this really interesting, deep conversation right in the beginning. And I told her I was Mormon, and she said, "What is that? That's like the multiple wife
thing." Yeah, the basic thumbnail
that,
impression
that, was
that
it.
Everyone
It was
has,
really
yeah.
like polygamy, I think, she had an idea of, and kind of thought that, you know, you had to dress really modest or something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, here's a moment from the film, actually, where she's talking about how you guys fall in love, which has to mean something. Like, what are you going to do with your Mormonism? What is she supposed to do? And the idea is, you're a devout Mormon at this time. She's going to have to maybe think about converting. And in this moment from the film Believer, she talks about what a, as she says, closed community it was.
When I met him, he was just a part of this kind of, I don't want to say closed community, but it was like there wasn't really a lot of outside, it's like a very Mormon community, you know? And I was definitely an alien to that. We had this like connection, but there were conversations early on that were like, you know, we can't date. If I was Mormon, we could entertain the idea, but we can't.
So you have to make this accommodation, I guess. And I think, again, this is the, this to me is reflective of the bigger accommodation that you have to make in your life now. Would you talk a little bit about how you tried to make that work? Because one of the things she says, and I love this, she says in the film that she figured that if I could be part of the Mormon community, if I could be allowed to follow my heart in the same way.
And that's that speaks to her in I think a really positive way. Asia is a powerful human being who can see the truth in a lot of things and beauty in things, and then also easily let go of things that she thinks are just not truths. I'm the opposite. I'm an all or nothing kind of guy. Really? It's
Are you still?
No, I can't be at this point in my life.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And I've learned that from my wife, actually. But I think it's a beautiful trait to have, to see the beauty in the world and to pick it up, but then also be able to let go of the non. But Mormons marry Mormons. It's like, not always, but it's definitely the norm. And, you know, I had to hide my first relationship. In high school, I dated a Catholic girl for 4 years, and we had to hide it because my parents did not approve because she wasn't Mormon. And plus, they didn't want me to have a serious relationship before my mission. So I hid it for 4 years. And then right before I was supposed to – then I applied for BYU. I got into BYU. And right before I went to BYU, I told my bishop I had had sex with this my Catholic girlfriend, and I got kicked out of BYU for that. So a week before I was supposed to go, I got kicked out. Totally shamed me in front of my whole community.
This is a story that comes up later in the film, we should just point out.
Yeah.
In a more tragic way. But,
exactly. Yeah. And I don't, this part of the, this the actual point that I got kicked out of BYU is actually not in the film, just because we just didn't, we only had so much time to tell a story. But so.
But this idea of shame.
The shaming. Yeah. That's what started my journey in saying, you know what, this is wrong. Even if I, because I could, you know, the religious things, whether I believed in Joseph Smith or his story, all those things, like I could, I was still like feeling that out and I wasn't sure. But as far as the shaming thing, I knew something was wrong because it sent me into a deep depression. It triggered this thing that had laid, I don't know if it was dormant in me or if it would have ever come out, but it triggered a deep depression that I've now dealt with for 10 plus years. And I attribute it to that moment in time. And so.
So now that when, because this is where Asia says, look, I can be with you on a lot of this stuff. With Mormonism.
Yep.
The gay community stuff, I can't come with you on. And that's, it seems like this is, and you go back to you mentioned in the film, you've been thinking about this a lot because you'd been shamed in the past. And all of a sudden now you're hearing stories of people who feel shame.
Yep. And
it all seems to come to a head.
Yeah. And one of my friends in middle school was Mormon and gay. And I remember seeing how difficult that was for him. To have to hide that from his parents. You know, he told me that when he was 16 years old, his mom walked into his room one day and said, I had this nightmare that you were gay. Oh, thank goodness it was just a nightmare. And here he was, you know, a closeted gay kid hearing his mom say that. And what all he said back was, oh yeah, okay. I'll go get ready for school, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's the reality of these kids. And so I'd already experienced, I already saw that there was something wrong. I just didn't, it didn't affect me, which I think is a lot of Christians, you know, it doesn't,
or
I'm
not
gay.
Or you didn't think it affected you, right?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't think it affected me.
Yeah.
And so you just kind of turn your head, which is the worst thing you can do of all, is be silent. And so once I met Asia and she was living with her two best friends who were gay, they were her roommates and they like were handcuffing each other to the federal building in wedding dresses.
Couldn't be more active in this issue.
Yes. And here comes this Mormon boy. And so I was the enemy to everything that they were trying to do. And so her two friends could not believe that she would date me. And they were very upset about it.
Let alone marry you.
Let alone marry me. And so neither of them came to our wedding, and that was devastating. Those were her two best friends. And she also had to deal with the fact that she felt like her whole community was saying, you know, you've been this incredible activist, and if you listen to her band, it was very politically driven and charged and had that punk rock spirit to it. And then she married a Mormon, and all of them felt like, hey, you know what? You're a fraud. You're turning your back on all your activism, which
you
for
caved.
Her, she was, I'm in love with this person. And, you know, none of her friends would even call me by my name. They all called me the Mormon boy. And that hurt me because I felt like you don't even know me. But on the same note, now that I've gotten older, I understand it because for them, they were so hurt and I represented everything that was holding them back from them being able to be married and be together. So, you know, it's been an interesting journey.
That's Dan Reynolds. He's the lead singer of the band Imagine Dragons. Don Argut directed the documentary film Believer, which is showing in the doc premiere section at this year's Sundance Film Festival. It's screening tonight at 10 p.m. at the Redstone Cinemas in Park City, and again on Saturday at the Temple Theater. We have details about all of that on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're continuing our coverage of the Sundance Film Festival with Don Argut's documentary about Mormon rock and roll star Dan Reynolds and his effort to find some kind of middle ground between his church and the LGBTQ community. The film is called Believer. There's a moment I want to play. We see he's a famous podcaster around here. His name's John DeLynn. He's an activist for the LGBT community. And he's featured in the film, and he talks about his own story being excommunicated and trying to be an advocate. And of course, this is, and Don, maybe we should mention that sort of the, one of the driving elements of the film, of course, is this alarming teen suicide rate, particularly in Utah and among people of faith, Mormons, and particularly that's the focus. We should talk a little bit about that. The fact that rates are, I think the statistic comes up in the film, tripled. Since 2008. Mm-hmm. And John, of course, makes this connection to this is when the church really kicked into its position fighting same-sex marriage.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, the story, you're just looking for ways to lay the story out in a way that is connecting dots and bringing things together and shedding light. And I think, you know, along this journey, you meet people that are, you know, as a storyteller, they're the things that are continuing to drive Dan forward. The more he learns, the more he understands, the more he sees, it becomes impossible to turn away. And then, you know, as a storyteller and within the film, you know, you need to do the same for the audience. And I think the last thing you want to do as a storyteller when you're making a film like this is kind of keep saying the same thing over and over again. I mean, it has to evolve. It has to keep getting more deeper, more, you know, more serious. And I think, you know, when we meet John kind of early on in Dan's journey, he's giving the kind of like, you know, nuts and bolts statistics on this. And also,
but he offers a challenge, right?
He offers a challenge and also, in a way, offers a glimpse into Dan's possible future if he is to go forward with this, which is, you know, John ended up getting excommunicated from the church. And that, to me, is, you know, Dan's moment of, okay, this is the put up or shut up moment, you know, because that's what's at stake.
Let me play this moment. This is a conversation, basically a Skype conversation between Dan and John. And I guess he kind of raises this, he doesn't really throw down the gauntlet, but he raises this kind of challenge. Here's another moment from the film Believer.
My family is all Mormon and they're very active. I have a real fear of losing all that.
Maybe you've heard the quote, the only thing required for evil to persist is for good men to do nothing. You've probably heard that, right?
I have, yeah.
I've always loved the church. I still do. I still consider myself Mormon. But I felt the same way you did. I didn't want to leave it. I didn't want to be excommunicated. I do think the number of overt bigots out there is a percentage is really small. But the number of Mormons, frankly, who just have decided to remain silent is extremely large. And so I've been watching you guys, and in my heart, I'm just like, things are going to change when these guys are willing to speak up.
So, Dan, how are you thinking when that comes? Like, because you, as the film conveys, you're really reflecting on that.
Yeah, that was definitely a moment for me where I think the reality hit me of what I was doing. I'm very close to my family. The last thing I ever want to do in my lifetime is hurt my family. They are such good people. I never want to misrepresent them. I never want to disrespect them. But on the same note, I have to follow my heart, and my heart has brought me to a place where we kind of divide on roads. And I had a realization in that moment also that it could happen that the church would not be cool with me going down that road like John and excommunicate me. And as John talks about later in the film, excommunication is such a damning, overwhelmingly devastating thing. Your community knows about it. Your family knows about it. And the teaching is that the reality to these people is, that they believe, Mormons, is that your family goes to heaven and you don't. And they go on to progress in life after this and you don't. Yeah. You are damned.
Meaning you're out of the tribe.
Stopped. You're essentially out of the tribe. So it's like the Scarlet Letter. It's like you are just, you know, it's a really heavy thing.
So at what point does it occur to you that you're going to try to find a space to work out these two differing perspectives together? Like, at what point did you, because I know this is on your mind, like, what comes next? There's this moment where you're talking to Tyler Glenn and you're saying, you're trying to make amends for this, again, your silence in the past, I think.
Yeah.
And you're like, what now? What do I do now?
Yeah, because I think, you know, I've spent quite a few years of my life in my 20s speaking and having words about things. And I just am so disinterested in that. I've seen that it doesn't do a lot. You know, we have a platform as a band, and I'll tweet, for instance, you know, when something happens, oh, this is my feelings on this, and this sucks. It doesn't do much. Maybe it makes people feel like, oh, they're thinking of me, but it really doesn't do much. And so it really felt like I needed to take some sort of significant action if I wanted to make a real change. And the hard thing is that, well, there's two sides to it. One, I know Mormons because I am a Mormon, and Mormons are good people. They really are. The majority of people that you talk to who know a Mormon, not always, obviously, I'm generalizing here, but a lot of times will say, they're a really good person. You know, they're honest, fairly honest. They're not perfect, but usually have good families and good values and good morals and are respectable citizens. But why, in this one way, can Mormons just, it's following the teachings of the leaders saying, you know, what I'm trying to get at is Mormons are conflicted about this. They want equality for all. They believe in equality and justice, but the Mormon leaders are saying this is a sin. And so they're so conflicted because they're also very loyal to their faith. So the question was how to really make a difference. It would do nothing for me to just rally the people who are already rallied. To get all the allies together and say, hey, let's be more allies. Okay, maybe that'll fire people up a little bit. It's not going to do a lot. You need to get the Mormons who are conflicted. You need to get the Mormons on the far right who think that being gay is a sin next to murder, which is what the church taught. So those are the people that needed to come. So getting that together all in one place was a very intimidating thing, but that's the only thing that I thought could actually make real change, because I believed if these Mormons could see these gay kids and really hear their stories, I believed in their hearts that that would push them over the edge to say, you know what? I'm not okay with this.
I want to play another moment from the film because you have this, and I should mention Tyler Glenn in The Neon Trees plays a remarkable role in the film, of course. And it's interesting the convergence between you, Dan, and Tyler in terms of your mission going to
so
Nebraska.
Random.
That is so strange.
There's so many missions, like hundreds of missions, and we just so happen to be called the same mission.
But he had a great experience in his mission, too, and it really did shape him. In fact, let me play a moment here, because I want people to hear Tyler Glenn. He talks about this experience where he was living his dream. Of course, Neon takes off, Neon Trees takes off, like your band did. And but he couldn't keep living as a closeted gay person. And his first experience, he talks about in the film, of getting a positive reaction, talking to, I think it's his manager.
Producer.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's producer Tim Pagnotta.
I came out to my producer. I was just like, Tim, do you want to know what these songs are about? And like, just saying it to him and having sort of the reaction from like a straight man, like I always feared would probably ridicule me because that was my experience. He like said, I'm so happy for you. And it was the first time that I ever attributed like positivity ever to being gay. I was expecting my life to turn to shit or to feel sinful or shame, and I didn't at all. And I was met with such, just inclusion. It was, 3 years after Prop 8, so I was met with a lot of LDS people saying, we need this conversation to broaden.
Now, as the film plays out, the really polarizing policy comes in November of 2015, which basically labeled same-sex couples apostates and didn't allow their children to be full members of the church. And that's a big part of the film, and Tyler talks about that being the kind of final gut punch for him. But you conceive with Tyler this idea of this concert, this festival. And then you're having this discussion with your wife while she's making you a sandwich, which I love this. I have to say, I love this because there's these moments where there's so. This film is funnier than I expected. By the way, it's pretty great.
I cringe during this.
No, dude, it's so good.
I feel so bad. Like it's just the meanest husband.
It's pretty great, but the essence of what you're trying to talk about, what you're trying to accomplish, I think is really important here. Let's play this moment from Believer.
What are we going to do for food?
If we can get food trucks, awesome. That's what I think.
I'm thinking food, and really what I should be thinking is how do we not offend 50% of the people that come?
You're just trying to enlighten people. You're not trying to offend anyone.
See what you just said right there? Enlighten people. That
you think that's
says
offensive?
To people, you're in the dark. Let me enlighten
no,
you.
No, 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 no. Educate.
You're stupid. Let me educate
no. you. No. That's not true. I think people don't know statistics. They don't know the reality of what's happening.
You can't come in and say you're wrong.
No.
You have to come in and say, let's talk and believe in the
you
goodness of people.
You have to change people's minds as
but
a friend.
But it's not even that. You just
ally.
Have to. You don't have to change people's minds. They have to change their minds. We have to, like, in my opinion, it's like, did you put bologna in this?
There's ham in there.
It's really weird tasting.
Is it?
We don't usually put ham in sandwiches, right? This is the first
no,
time.
No, but it's like what was in there.
The Mormon, this is where I was raised, Mormonism. So this is my community. These are my people. That's the last thing they want to do is to say, I'm right, you're wrong. Come and let me tell you why. It needs to be everybody come to the table and let's see what's happening. These are the people who are in it, you know.
Yeah.
Their message is 10 times more powerful than me getting up. Hey, I'm the singer of Imagine Dragons. You know that song? Radioactive, radioactive. Now, let me tell you everything that I know about this subject because I really don't know that much. And everybody's going to be like, I'm all heart. The education is yet to come.
So there are two things I want to talk about the scene. You're trying to find an accommodation. You don't want this to be patronizing. You don't want Mormons to show up at that concert and feel preached to. You want them to feel welcome, even though you don't agree with this policy. So that's an important part of it. And I liked that interchange because it really expresses that. And we should say, I don't want to give too much away, but the drama that's going into whether or not they're going to be able to pull off this concert.
Yeah.
And you'd think it'd be easy. It's Imagine Dragons. Neon Trees is going to be there. We can get 20,000 people there like that.
Yep.
But it's not that easy.
Oh.
And the drama of that is amazing for the film, I have to say.
Yeah, no, I think the other thing as a filmmaker, you certainly, no matter what, I'm on the sidelines. I'm as much as I'm, kind of in it, in the mix. And I want certain things to happen, but I can't make them happen, you know? And, you know, Dan, you know, on the side, you know, we're communicating, you know, outside the film, and he's giving me insight into what's happening. And it's, you know, but like what, now that you're able to kind of put it all together and take that step back and you see how everything unfolds in this really kind of amazing way, you know, it's one of those, to me, one of the great joys of making documentaries and watching documentaries is just, you know, the old adage of, you know, truth is always stranger than fiction. Yeah. And, you know, you can't, it's so much better and so much more rewarding when, you know, things work out the way they do, when you're able to put all the pieces together and step back and say, wow, yeah, I can't believe it. And we start, and the other thing, I'm probably going all over the place, but we started this film in April. So we really had no idea what the hell was going to happen or how it was all going to pan out. And it could have very easily, there was certainly a moment in the film, and we're not giving anything away at this point, but that the concert wasn't going to happen. It was going to be postponed potentially a year. And what would that mean for the film? Do we have to take a break? Do we make that part of the story that he couldn't pull it off? And, yeah. And this is, so, you know, there's all those things that are constantly happening, but you know, I'm really, really, really proud of what this film is and what it's about, and that it gives Dan and Asia and Tyler a voice.
That's Don Argut. He directed the documentary film Believer, which is showing in the doc premiere section at this year's Sundance Film Festival. Dan Reynolds is the lead singer of the band Imagine Dragons. You can see the film tonight at 10 p.m. at the Redstone Cinemas in Park City. It's also showing on Saturday at the Temple Theater. We have details on our website, RadioWest.org. We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now to our conversation with Dan Reynolds, the lead singer of the band Imagine Dragons, and the director Don Argut. We're talking about the film Believer, which is part of the doc premiere section at this year's Sundance Film Festival. There's this amazing high in the film. And then, I don't want to give too much away, but then, Dan, it comes back to the reality you were really hoping for. And Mormons will understand this. I think even people who aren't Mormon here in this community, then comes the General Conference, Latter-day Saint General Conference, and you were thinking, gosh, the church said something about people coming to this concert, and it clearly made a difference. People showed up. The church made the statement, and then you were hoping to hear from something from General Conference. And what you heard was not what you wanted. Not only that, it was exactly the opposite of what you were hoping for. And that was, yeah. I think you said that was a dark place.
It's still like, it's really hard for me to think. It's, I know it sounds dramatic, but when you're fighting so hard for something and you actually feel like change is on the horizon. You know, I wasn't expecting the prophet to get up, and I'm not a naive Mormon. I know Mormons would look at this and say, what you expected them to get up and say, hey, God just revealed to us now that it's okay to be gay. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
I especially think this, they're in a very strange position right now, because say that God, say the most believing Mormon of all, say that God gives revelation to the prophet next month that to be gay is okay. That'd be pretty suspicious. The church probably knows that would be pretty suspicious timing. But so a lot of Mormons would say, well, hey, you can't do this, Dan, because say this is the revelation and God is waiting to do that. Well, the church is going to postpone that. You're not going to help. You're going to make them even more antsy to do it, because it can't be out of pressure. Every day that's going by, these kids are taking their lives. So what are we supposed to do? Just sit and wait for God to reveal it and be quiet and okay about it just so they don't feel pressure? No. I think we need to talk about it. And we need to be a little angry about it, because these parents are angry. You know, I was just hoping for just a message of just some progress, some appreciation, some love, some acknowledgement. Not of me, not of Love Loud. I don't care. Just acknowledgement of our youth and what they're going through, and that they're in the works of making it better. But instead, what did they do? Well, they said, let us tell you again something that you all know. Trust me, you know this. We've told it to you for decades. Marriage is between a man and a woman, and being gay is sin. or being gay and acting upon it as a sin. And, you know, it frustrates me that I have to, every time I do these interviews, I have to say that because I have Mormons that correct me. And because Mormons say, it's not being gay that's a sin, it's being gay and acting upon it. And I'm Mormon, by the way, just for the record. So when I'm saying Mormons, I'm speaking about these dialogues I'm having with my friends where they say, hey, whoa. We don't believe that being gay is a sin. We believe being gay and acting upon it is sin.
Or as somebody says in the film, doing gay stuff.
Yeah, what a silly... I'm just like, we're all Mormons, as Mormons, we're intelligent enough people to say, you know what, can we just drop that? That's such a silly... That is such a silly... The Mormon church right now is speaking, and you got me fired up right now, so I'm sorry. But they're speaking in these platitudes of love. Of, you know, a lot of Mormons, when I talk to them, they say, hey, the church is doing better. They're saying... in their general conference, we need to love our gay kids. And that's good, but it actually is also a little bit more dangerous. And I'll tell you why. Because when you open this door and they're saying, there's a place for you, and it's shiny inside, these gay kids are saying, you know what, actually, maybe there is a place for me. And they walk in and there's still thumbtacks on the floor, all over the floor. And they are just being beat up. I almost rather the Mormon church would say, there's a line in the sand, don't come in. It's not safe for you. But the thing is, I'm conflicted about that too, because then, you know, like I said, a lot of people would say, well, tell these LGBT kids, leave Mormonism. It's easy. This is the easy answer to your documentary, Dan. You tell everybody, hey, Mormonism's not safe for gay kids. Leave. That actually is very uneducated. And for anybody to say that, they haven't looked into this, because getting a kid to get kicked out of their home or causing that conflict in the family can be so dangerous. You can't just tell them to leave the religion, and maybe the religion is important to them, and maybe they believe it, and maybe it makes them the best version of who they want to be. So who are you to tell them otherwise? So the question is, how do we make it safe for them when they're here? Because they're going to be here. At least for a while longer, they're going to be here.
Do you think this film is going to make a difference?
I hope so.
I mean,
That's the question you wrestle within the film, it seems like.
I've gotten countless letters and have had countless interactions with parents who have said, my child came out to me after Love Loud. Thank you.
That's the name of the concert, by the way.
Yeah, Love Loud, sorry, yeah. Or, you know, at our church we had X amount of kids who came out after Love Loud because they felt it was safe for them. I think that's progress. I think that that's something rad that's happening. However, is it enough? No, not even close. Is the suicide rate going to go down next year? I hope. I don't know. I think while these policies remain intact, I don't think we can have a lot of progress. When you're giving our youth two options, this is the Mormon church, these are the options to the youth to be in good standing with God, which is a real thing for them. They're literally thinking of a literal God who is up in the heavens with a body, this is the Mormon belief, who is looking at them. And even if you're taught it's a non-judgmental, loving God, which we are, you still feel the weight of going against that God. And so they're given two options. Be celibate, which you don't have to be a genius to know how damning that is for a child. Hey, just be loveless for the rest of your life. Take the greatest part of life, you don't get to have that. Folk, you know, there's even a video that they have on this Mormon and gay website, which is their initiative to try to make this better, that shows a girl who talks about how basically she feels better now that she's told her friends that she's gay and that she's not acting upon it. And it ends with her saying, now I can focus on sports. Part of me wants, as a Mormon, wants to say, you know, thank you, Mormon Church, for trying, but you're failing. I have no other words to say other than that. And you know what? And I sat down with two of the apostles. They invited me to come sit with them after Love Loud Festival, because I genuinely believe they wanted to have it fixed. Some people may look at it and say, well, maybe they were just trying to quiet you or something. I hear both sides, but I like to have a positive outlook on it and say, you know what? They genuinely were trying to make it better. And we sat down and they said, what can we do to make this better? And I told them, there's only one thing. The policies have to change. You know, there was someone else who was in the room at that point who said, well, what about this? What if, you know, and it wasn't one of the apostles, but they said, you know, what if we just make it a smaller sin? We say to be gay, it's just a small sin. You know, it's not as big as murder, but, you know, it's more like, hey, you're gossiping or something. And I just, I laughed out loud. These are the kind of mental gymnastics, though, that are taking place.
See, but Dan, because this policy is a revelation now. It's not really just a policy.
Yeah.
And the current president of the church now, Russell Nelson, he kind of made it.
Yeah.
In a speech, he said, this is God's will.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of work to do.
But you know what? They also said that it was God's will that only white men could have the priesthood for a time being, and that changed. God changed. It was also God's will that men should have a lot of wives. That changed. Some may say that was the pressure of America, and some may say that was the pressure of the civil rights movement. Mormons would say that it was just the time and place.
Yeah.
I have my own opinion on that. You could probably guess what it is, but but on the same note, like I said, I am a unique Mormon. I have a lot of parts of Mormonism that I love and that I value, and I am a Mormon. But man, there's some things that I don't value and that I'm pretty upset about right now and that I hope change.
It's Dan Reynolds, lead singer of the band Imagine Dragons. He's, of course, the main subject of Don Argott's new film, Believer. Don directed the film, which is showing in the doc premiere section at this year's Sundance Film Festival. You can see it tonight at 10 p.m. at the Redstone Cinemas in Park City. It's also showing on Saturday at the Temple Theater. We have details for that on our website, radiowest.org. Dan and Don, thank you both
can
very
I make,
much.
I just want to say actually one last thing that I think is
sure.
really important.
Yeah.
Mormons believe that this is a church led by men who are prophets, but men still make mistakes. So for all the believing Mormons out there, this is our church is primed for this. You know, it is primed for change. If there is an Orthodox religion that can make this change, it's Mormonism. Because the church believes that even the prophets make mistakes. So some people may say, like I said, that it's just a corporation and they're just changing with the times. Others, Mormons, may say it was God's time. And other Mormons may say it's led by men and men made mistakes. And so when they realized they were making a mistake and acting out of prejudice, and they changed it. There's a lot of different ways to look at it. And I'll leave it up to other people to decide what that is. But I think that's an important note.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks to Renee Bodley, Bob Hendricks, Scott Matthews, and the rest of the staff at the community radio station KPCW in Park City. Thanks also to Claire Jones. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.